Good morning or good afternoon, wherever you're at. I don't know. It's morning here right now, but welcome to the Big Igloo Podcast, Theology Thursdays. We are smart theology and dumb dad jokes. And, you know, yeah, still got this list of 200 dad jokes here. I didn't do my prep work here and stuff.
I guess you're getting the full organic.
That's right. I'm just going to read one. All right. One, then we're moving on. Okay. I think my wife is putting glue on my antique guns collection. She denies it, but I'm sticking to my guns.
Yep.
Come on.
Dumb dad joke. Really, that's it. You hit the mark.
That's it. I thought it was kind of clever. All right. But we are working through kind of a new series here. And actually, I don't know because I haven't decided how I'm going to put these in order here. So I don't know. This one might be the last one that we do. I don't know. But we either have been or are working through the parables of Jesus. Not all of them. We're not going to go through every single parable of Jesus. But I know that we like began this series talking about, you know, the parable of the sower and just thinking about the types of soil and the sower that sows the word. And of course, that interpretation. But there is something that I want us to tap into as we go through these parables. It's that, you know, the meaning is not immediately clear always, and that's okay. Right. So if you're reading a parable and you're kind of like, what? It's okay to go back. Of course, always check the context. You know, what is Jesus? We'll see this a little bit here in Luke. With this parable in Luke 16, but we want to make sure that, you know, we're paying attention to the surrounding things and we don't just rush in with our own set of interpretations. Right, yeah. And there's kind of some errors that you can fall into. And I've been reading some works by a scholar by the name of Craig Blomberg. And Blomberg really talks about how, you know, through the history of the church, there's kind of sometimes been an over allegorization where just everything means something, you know, sure. And you got to interpret it down to, oh, well, wheat represents this here and oil here. And he talks about how there's an error there. And then some people just go with a completely non-allegorical approach. And he thinks that that's a ditch as well, at least as I can tell, just looking through his works.
Right.
But he kind of proposes a model, and we'll kind of try it out here today. He proposes a model of kind of like however many characters there are in the story, like there's kind of like a 1 point per character.
Huh.
And I think what that does is it helps you kind of distill it down to just parables are meant to kind of just push forward a simple observation or a simple, now they can be complex in how we reflect on them,
sure.
but really just like there can just be the simple meaning that don't push something too far. Don't make a parable say something that Jesus didn't intend or goes beyond what he would have had in mind. But at the same time, just that invites us in. Now, all of the Bible is meditation literature, right? So we're constantly called in to evaluate and to think about these things. So we're going to jump into this. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts before we jump into this manager. Go ahead.
Well, before just talking about parables, something that just kind of occurred to me as you were speaking about that, isn't it interesting? Because like at the time when Jesus was speaking these parables, it's not like it was always that simple thing though. I mean, a lot of time it was a challenge to thought. You know, like I'm preaching about John 6 this weekend at a conference. And he's saying, eat my flesh, drink my blood. People probably like, this dude's a cannibal. What is he talking about? And so it's an interesting complex of like, I think that's what sometimes a parable, don't you think? Sometimes it is like the invitation for food for thought. And that it's not always just that clear cut. It's making you sit and think on it and meditate, like you just said.
Absolutely. Well, and not only that, but I mean, like even like with what you shared, and even though, it wasn't a parable, but Jesus does kind of like, and I'm not saying you said that, but I mean, just as we're just thinking about this, like, Jesus is always pulling us in and inviting us in. And we hit this on this with the parable of the sower that we kind of came to this conclusion that, you know, people are not naturally good listeners.
Right.
And how many times Jesus says, who has ears to let him hear? And sometimes Jesus would just say, like, eat my flesh, drink my blood. Just kind of let that hang out over there. And then all of a sudden the crowd dwindles, right?
Right.
And it's like, he looks at the disciples, you going to leave too?
Yeah.
And, you know, and Peter's finally like, oh, where would we go? You have the words of life, you know, but can't imagine that. I mean, the disciples had to be thinking about, well, I could go back and fish. You know? did Dad sell his boat? I don't know. He sold the boat and gave it to the ministry. I don't know. You know, but those things, you know, those things do cross our minds and stuff. And so there is this place of like, are we willing to really listen?
Right.
And parables do kind of pull us into that. And I think that if you just kind of go through and think you know what a parable means, well, maybe back off just a smidge, right? You know, and there's always an invitation to join in. Travis, you got any thoughts along that? Or
no, I think it's just interesting. I mean, we're going to jump into Luke 16 here in a second, but like it seems like Luke, I was just thinking about, man, like, because what, Luke 15, right, has the parable of the lost son.
Right.
I know there's lost sheep, lost coin, lost son. Yeah. Those are all, yeah.
And so like, mm-hmm. This is just like a little section here of just parables.
Yep.
And so, yeah. We haven't really talked about this, but Luke.
Yeah.
His storytelling. Right. How does this play into the whole narrative of the entire book of Luke?
I want to get to that towards the end. Oh, yeah. Okay. So I'm glad you're kind of teeing it up there, kind of inviting our listeners into, I believe this is only found in the Gospel of Luke. I think this parable in particular. So this is the parable of the dishonest manager. I think so. I didn't verify that, but I'm pretty sure it's only in this one here. The parable of the dishonest manager. So this is Luke chapter 16. But yeah, Travis, I'm glad that you brought up like, okay, Luke has a certain agenda or a certain angle that he's writing. There's a reason why he puts the stories in that he does, as well as, you know, the parables he does. So let's jump in. I'm going to read just the parable here. But I did print out a little bit more than that, and we'll get to that here in a second. So here's Jesus. He said to the disciples, "There was a rich man who had a manager, and the charges were brought to him that this man was wasting his possessions. And he called him and said, 'What is this I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be manager.' And the manager said to himself, 'What shall I do since my master is taking the management away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. I have decided what to do. So then when I am removed from management, people may receive me into their houses.' So summoning his master's debtors one by one, he said to the first, 'How much do you owe, my master?' He said, 100 measures of oil. He said to him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly, and write 50. Then he said to another, 'And how much do you owe?' He said, 100 measures of wheat. He said to him, 'Take your bill and write 80. The master commended, that's an interesting word, we'll come back to that. The master commended the dishonest manager, commended in dishonesty. This leads to part of the problem, right? The master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings.'" Boom. There's Jesus just kind of throwing this story out there, telling this story. Okay. Now I want us to just kind of, again, I know you guys kind of read it. I know, Travis, we've talked a little bit about the interpretation of this and stuff, but I want to back off for a second. Let's just talk about what problems does this parable kind of present to us?
Well, the manager is being dishonest with what people owe his master.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's kind of been this, squanderer. He's not managed his master's wealth well.
Right.
So this doesn't seem like a guy that we would want to follow.
Right.
Yet, doesn't Jesus kind of make the point, be like this guy?
Yeah. Absolutely. And we were talking about this before.
Yeah.
I always thought shrewdness was like a negative context, but like when you're reading that, it says, like you said, commended.
He's commended for his shrewdness.
That kind of blew. I was like, okay, well, that's interesting.
Right.
So that's a question I have, like, is it a commendment or is it like one of these eat my flesh statements that are making us lean in?
Yeah.
I think it's definitely inviting us to lean in. Yeah. Travis, what are you thinking?
Well, I was going to say, so that both the master and the manager don't seem like all that great people. I mean, the man, right? I mean, it's like you're looking for the good guy in the story.
Right.
Or, the good Samaritan or, somebody that unexpected, but I was like, I don't want to be either one of these guys.
Right.
And so, from the standpoint of the master, like commending his dishonesty in his shrewdness, as it's just like, that's.
Well, yeah. I like that you say that, Travis, because it is interesting that Jesus does tend to sometimes kind of have that, like even with the parable of the Good Samaritan, as speaking to a Jewish audience, he brings up the Samaritan who was kind of the enemy of the Jewish people. I mean, at least in their minds, right? There was kind of some racism and, all that stuff that was going on. And so, Jesus has no problem sometimes taking people and making them the hero, of the story. To push his audience. And so it's interesting because we're looking at this, and it's like, okay, so there's this dishonest manager and yet Jesus is saying, go and be like him. Hmm. Right?
Jesus is telling us to be dishonest. So
he can't be, right? Like he can't, like they can't be what's going on here, right? And And so, well, so let's just think about, okay, let's switch gears here. Okay. What are some possible solutions? I don't want to like give the final reveal here. I just want to, again, if you're approaching this for the first time, what might our listeners be thinking are possible solutions? Okay. I mean, what do we see here that's redeemable? If you're sitting there listening to Jesus, you know, what are you thinking that would be something that we could redeem?
It's a great question, Chris.
Right? It's like well, I don't know.
I'm digging here. I'm trying to figure.
Yeah.
Because again, the whole story seems like, I mean, he's basically going in for his master and negotiating a lower price.
Right.
So the master's not getting his full amount owed. And just again, him being dishonest, mm-hmm. and it seems like it's kind of a selfish kind of like, how am I going to save my skin when I get fired?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, so, totally.
So yeah, it's like some good stuff that comes from this.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts? I'm trying to.
You know what was really interesting is I was just kind of reading up and studying on this. I saw that there have been a number of people who have either preached on this or said, for example. This is one of those things. Again, this is one of these parables that kind of gives us this tension and like, what do we do with this? What I found was that some people have taught that, what's going on here is he's just, you know, the manager gets like a commission. All right. Mm. And so he's just basically surrendering. He knows he's going to get fired. So he's just surrendering his commission and he's going out and collecting all of this stuff. And the problem with that, and this is where it kind of gets into, and these are 2,000-year-old plus stories, you know. I mean, specifically the parables are around 2,000 years, but it's just stories in the Bible. These we're really removed a lot of things, but we have to be really careful because sometimes there are things that get told about stories in the Bible that don't check out, you know, factually. Right. And so this would be one of those examples, at least as I understand it. There doesn't seem to be the cultural practice. I've not seen any documentation on that he was surrendering his commission or that there's anything in the text. Because while that immediately makes us go, oh, okay, yeah, just do that. And it could still somewhat fit. I mean, if he's just saying, okay, I'm going to get fired, so this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But instead, what seems to be the case here is the connected to his shrewdness. Now, again, shrewdness, I don't know. I'd have to do a deeper study on that word itself, you know, as to whether it's positive or negative. It can be this wittiness, this cleverness, this stealth, you know. I mean, so depending on how you see that, it could be positive or negative. But what's interesting here is with the shrewdness is he says when he goes to forgive these debts. Now, here's the thing. These are like, we're talking like gallons and like hundreds of gallons of oil. Like I think in here it says, said to another, or 100 measures of oil. Let me see if I have it in these little notes here.
NIV says 900 gallons of olive oil.
I had 875 gallons, right? And so you're looking at that's a lot of oil. These are major accounts here, right? And so this guy is, you know, he's, you know, cutting it by 50% on that one, you know, going from 100 measures of oil down to whatever. Down to half of that 100 measures. He said, take a bill, write 50. Yeah. So he's going from 100 measures down to 50. I mean, that's a 50% reduction in the bill. But you're still talking hundreds of gallons of oil that this guy is supposed to pay for. Mm-hmm. And what I think probably fits more accurately is, again, the shrewdness is, okay, I'm still kind of acting as the manager, even though I'm going to get fired.
Right.
The ink hasn't dried on the paperwork yet. Okay. So I still have some leverage. And what I'm going to do is I'm telling you, we'll settle the account here. You know, write this down. And even if I get fired, my master, if he reneges on this, it's going to make him look bad. Mm. So I'm using my last little bit of leverage to basically like, here you go, pay this. Now, I just did you a huge, huge favor.
Now you owe me.
Okay. Yeah. Now you owe me. And there's a price to pay on this, the day of my daughter's wedding. No, I'm just a little pop culture reference there. Right? You know, so now there's, yeah, there's this price to pay. And so what's interesting is, you know, it's almost like, and this is me reading into this a little bit. I'll just admit that.
Right.
But it's almost like, you know, like the master, I could just imagine him just being like, oh, well played.
Right.
Well played. You know, I'm not going to protest this because I'm going to look bad. Mm-hmm, and then right. those guys, these business guys are going to talk to other business guys and maybe. So it's almost like it's worth it for me to just honor your deal. Mm-hmm. Right. You shrewd little, you know, like right. you're getting away scot-free. I know what you're doing. You knew I was going to fire you, but you worked it. You worked it. Good job. I'm not going to look bad. I'm not going to be the bad guy. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so there seems to be kind of this tone, right? But again, what do we do with that?
Right. Yeah. The redemptive part. So I guess I'm wondering, like when it says, and I tell you, make friends by yourselves by the means of unrighteous wealth, so when it fails, that they may receive you into the eternal dwellings.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that, like, what do we do with that?
Okay.
What is that?
Well, let's go ahead then and think about who are the characters in the story. So let's just kind of like just practically like walk through. Because what I like about Blomberg's model is he kind of says, hey, there's kind of like kind of a 1 point per character.
Okay. Right.
So who are the characters?
The master and the manager.
Okay. Master, people. Manager. Who else?
The debtors.
The debtors, right? Yeah. Yeah. The people are in debt. All right. So we would expect, according to his model, that if we have three characters, then we should look for 3 points. So let's start with the master here. Let's just start with the master here. What? Now, here's the thing. This is why we got to be so careful because, you know, Jesus does this a couple of times. You know, I know he talks about like the unrighteous judge and all that. And even in that parable, he's talking about how we ought to pray. You know, and what's really interesting about that parable is, you know, when he says, you know, the widow who's seeking justice and she keeps going and keeps going and keeps going, and the judge is finally like, oh, fine, I'll finally listen to you, okay? And what's weird is, again, if you kind of look at that from, you know, comparing that to God, well, God's not an unrighteous judge.
Right.
Okay? But it's actually kind of like a contrasting point where he's basically saying, okay, even an unrighteous judge is going to give this woman mm-hmm. mercy, right? How much more will your heavenly father, mm-hmm. right? So sometimes right. there are some of these contrasting images. And so we have to kind of think about this, like just because there's a master here in the story, who might the master represent? I mean, just immediately as you think about it, I mean, who does the master most of the time represent?
God.
Represents right. God, right? Yeah. So about now, here's the thing. We got to be careful though, because again, we don't want to sit there and say, oh, this guy's just like God. So God, this is saying something about the nature of God.
Right.
But what could we pull out of here that we would say is in common? That what does God and this master have in common?
I was going to say he shows grace to his master even after, like,
you mean the servant? Yes.
So the master
shows grace.
Right. Shows grace to the manager.
By firing him? No. Just kidding.
by yeah, like, I mean, at least the guy just forgave, like, you know, half of his debts.
Right.
And didn't go after him.
Yeah.
He applauded him. So I guess in my mind, it's like he's
yeah.
a little gracious there.
I think you're thinking way too hard.
Okay.
I think you're thinking way too hard. Not that that's bad or wrong. Sure. I mean, we can entertain this. What you know, what has the master done ultimately? I mean, what's this story imply?
Oh, he's righteous. He realized that the master or the manager has been irresponsible.
Yeah.
And so.
So what has he done? I mean, if you have a CEO to manager relationship, what does that imply? I mean,
there's a hierarchy.
There's a hierarchy. And what has that CEO done? They've entrusted
His wealth.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. His wealth, possessions, his, business, yeah. whatever. Okay. So how is that like God?
He's given us authority and dominion on the earth.
There you go. Who does it ultimately belong to?
Him.
It's God's.
Right.
The Bible says the earth and the fullness of there is the Lord's, right?
Right.
But the Lord has entrusted managers on this planet.
Right.
The first manager ever. Yeah. You know, Adam and Eve, right? Yeah. You know, Adam and Eve, they were the first managers, right? And so it's the Lord's possession, but he does entrust, you know, the management right. of the resources, okay? And so there's something there that if we look at the first character, we can look and say, okay, hey, there's a manager, and right. he's entrusted something to, you know, his steward. I'm sorry. I said, there's a master.
Right.
Yeah.
Got to come up with, there's Bill and then there's Bob. But yeah, there's the master, the owner of it all, who is entrusted this. So again, there's something that we can see. That's all the farther we really want to go with comparisons.
Right.
We don't want to sit there and go, well, what did this guy have for breakfast? And what does that mean to, you know, right. the nature and character yeah. of God? No, yeah. no, stop, stop, stop. You're going too far with the parable, right? But we just look at that. Now, let's look at the manager. What might we say about the manager? What do we know about him?
He's rich.
Okay.
He's managing his resources.
Mm-hmm. And how has he been doing with that?
Poorly.
Yeah, it says here in verse one here, it says that the man was wasting his possessions. And he called and said to him, what is this I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be manager. So here's the thing. There's kind of like this little grace period, all right? Turn in your accounts, right?
Right.
You know, so in other words, pay up, right? So there's this thing. So obviously, there's a responsibility that the manager has.
Right.
But what's the
manager? Falling short.
Yeah, what's the manager been doing?
Yeah, he's been falling short. He's been misusing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now we get to
the debtors.
The debtors, right? Okay. Now, this is where I think maybe it gets a little more tricky, a little more nuanced. Okay. Because really, what is the purpose? So summoning his master's debtors one by one, he said to the first, okay, how much do you owe my master? 100 measures of oil. Said to him, take your bill, sit down, right? Okay, I'm going to skip down here. It says, the master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. And oh, I'm missing it here. Sorry, it's actually in the servant's or the manager's description that I'm looking for. I've decided what to do so that when I am removed from management, people may receive me into their houses, okay? And then what he goes on to do, that tells us who these people are that he's probably expecting this return from, okay?
Right.
That they would receive them. So what is the role of the debtors?
Role of the debtors. I mean, he's who they're banking on for their future hospitality.
Yeah.
And livelihood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, basically they are his reward.
Right.
Okay? So as we think about rewards, what do we know of rewards in scripture? You know what, just pan out and just think about how has Jesus talked about rewards? How, as we think about rewards, where do we experience rewards?
In serving, and I mean, not good works, not like good works gives you rewards, but it's that
it does, place. Sure, right? It does, yeah, absolutely. But again, where? When and where will we experience the fullness of those things, right? There's eternal rewards, right? Now, obviously, he's talking about natural things in this life, okay? And so here's what I think, all right? And actually, I totally got this from Blomberg, all right? And this was his explanation. He kind of thinks there's three points to this parable, and these are the three points that he makes. Is that number one, is that all God's people will be called to give an account. So in other words, if we think about the master, if we think about, you know, there is a master who's expecting a return on his investment. There's a master, and we see that in a couple other parables, you know, but there's a master who's overseeing this, right? And he is expecting, and so there will be an accounting and a reckoning for the resources that he has entrusted to us, okay? The second thing is that, listen, so that's all God's people will be called to give an account. Number two, preparation for that day should involve a prudent use of all resources, especially finances. Which is really interesting, right? Yeah. You know, a lot of times people think, I don't care about money. Well, you should, right? But it matters how, and obviously you don't want to idolize money, but money is important. I mean, right. It's absolutely important. Okay. And then it results, number three, such prudence, which is true discipleship, will be rewarded with eternal life and joy. So if we look at this parable, Jesus is not saying, go be dishonest, rip off your boss to make friends.
Yeah. Right.
But he is using a way, because I love what Jesus says here. He says, you know, the master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. Now, Jesus kind of switches here. He says, for the sons of this world. That's interesting because right. he says the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light.
Right.
Okay. What's really interesting about this is they found this like with the Dead Sea Scrolls, like one of the more often references that the people at Qumran, they referred to themselves and the righteous as the sons of light. So there's a phrase at that time is to be a son of light was to be a son of God. To be a son of this world was to be
right fleshly.
Yeah, fleshly, not belonging to God. Right. So it's interesting because he says, for the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. It's so in a weird way, it's kind of like, you know, this is my spin on it. You guys tell me what you think of it. But it's almost like Jesus is like saying, you know what? If there's anything that the people in this world get right, they understand the relationships. They understand the importance of leveraging certain things for the value that's here and now. They do that now, but they fail at understanding eternal things.
Right.
And it's almost like the sons of light have the eternal things in mind, but they don't do so well with the person-to-person relationships here. It's like right. Jesus is saying, hey, take a play from their playbook. No, he's not saying go be dishonest. He's not saying that. But he's saying, do you think about the relationships that you have? How do you manage right. your resources? Do you think like this guy thought, like, hey, you know what? I'm about to lose opportunity, so I'm going to do what I can to make sure that I have somewhere to go? Right. Because he says, I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth or your, you know, as other Bibles say, unrighteous mammon. This is not saying money is unrighteous. This is actually an idiom. It's an expression back in that time. We might even say like dirty, filthy money or, you know, we can right. say things, but it doesn't mean that we all hold this value that money is dirty, mm-hmm. right? But we understand that money can lead to bad things or, you know, detrimental sure. consequences, behaviors, whatever.
Right.
But he says, I tell you, make friends for yourself by means of unrighteous wealth. No, he's just saying, make friends by right. means of money. You know, take someone to lunch. Go, like, build that relationship. Build those networks. Like, do that. Not in a dishonest way.
Right.
Right. So that when it fails, in other words, when the money fails, because it will, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings. And so there's this idea that like it is about eternity in the long, sure. you know, in the long run, the grand scheme of things. But what's really interesting, I don't know, I'm going to pause there before I go on, but you guys have got any thoughts?
Well, so yeah, it's really clicking with me that this parable really got a lot to do with money.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, I might be a little slow on that, but it's like, man, he's talking about money a lot, but okay. So, I mean, really that last statement, it's like, let your money like kind of work for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
as far as like your worship and how you conduct yep. yourself as a Christian. Yeah.
It's almost a tactic, like yeah. a tactic on showing them the eternal glory.
Absolutely. Well, and here's what's really crazy is, you know, of all the gospels, Luke probably has the most to say about the poor, about the disadvantaged. And he preaches against money mm-hmm. as far as like the selfishness that people have. Luke brings so much attention to money. It's woven. If you just sit down and read his gospel and just look at the different times that wealth, money, and how wealthy people are perceived and all this kind of stuff. And we did that episode, man, if you want to go back and listen, we did an episode on Zacchaeus and just how maybe we maybe misunderstood mm-hmm. the whole Zacchaeus thing. But it's interesting because it's where the rich ruler is turned down just before Zacchaeus. Luke throws all these things. And so like you brought up at the beginning of the show, there is an angle that Luke is presenting here. But here's what's interesting. So if we just cut it off there, that might seem to be a little like, okay, like kind of abrupt. But look at this. In verse 10, it says, one who is faithful in a very little is faithful in much. Okay. Again, so we could kind of like, our minds can kind of drift back towards that manager, right? Because this guy was not being faithful with what he had. And to one who is dishonest in a very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust you with the true riches? Look at that. It's almost like Jesus is drawing this parallel between what we do with our practical money, which is why you should take Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University right now.
Good plug.
Good plug, Dave. All right. You know, but thinking about like, you know, something like that, like there is something correlated to how we handle money.
Right.
And then, you know, who will entrust you with the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Any thoughts there before I, you know, just kind of read on here?
That, I was going to say that pops up in several gospels, right?
Yeah.
You know, right. It's like, yeah, you can't serve both God and money.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And so once again, and I would say it's crazy because, you know, and money is one of those things. I'm guilty of this. Money's the one thing that we think is ours. Mm. You know what I mean? It's like the one thing's like, that's my money.
Right.
Right. And it's like, well, if we really think like Christians are supposed to think,
right,
it's really seeing I'm a steward, I'm a manager.
And it's so interesting. This whole thing has been about money.
Yeah.
And at the end, he's like, you don't serve. He's like telling us to be responsible with money. And then at the end, it's like, but you can't serve God and money.
Yeah.
And so it's this idea of exactly the hierarchy we were just talking about earlier. If he's talking about money and it's, you know, in a sense, we're the manager. That's managing his resources is important that we manage it well, because ultimately it goes to him.
Now listen to this. So it transitions here. Verse 14. The Pharisees, who were lovers of money, think Luke's got a little agenda here. The Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard all these things and they ridiculed him. Ooh, he touched a nerve.
Shopping cart.
What do you think the Pharisees, what do you think the Pharisees have been doing with their position? What do you think they've been doing with their status?
Right.
What do you think they've been, you know what I mean? Okay. He said to them, "You are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is exalted among men is an abomination in the sight of God." Mm. The law and the prophets were until John, since the good news of the kingdom of heaven of God is preached, and everyone forces his way into it. But it is easier for heaven and earth to pass away than for the for one dot of the law to become void. And so he goes into that, and there's a rebuke. And guess what Jesus tells right on the heels of that? The story of the rich man and Lazarus. So really all of chapter 16 is all about money. It's all about finances, about resources and what you do with them. And of course, the story of rich man and Lazarus is Lazarus is begged at the man's gate, and this guy, you know, the dogs lick his wounds, and this man passes by him, does nothing for him, and then boom, you know,
right,
they both die in the night and they both wake up, you know, and it's not the rich man. And this would have been a turn, you know, for the people at the time. This, you know, because the rich man is in hell and Lazarus is at Abraham's side. And right, so that would have been, because at that time, status and wealth, you know, and we kind of do this today, you know, oh, that person, they're so blessed. Mm. Oh man, God has really blessed them. And we say that sometimes there is kind of like this financial or monetary thing attached.
Right.
And it's like, well, and especially in this day, well, if you were part of the upper crust of society, well, God was blessing you clearly. Mm. And so for then Jesus to tell another parable where tables have turned, mm-hmm, and it's not the rich man who's in the place of honor, but instead the beggar.
Right.
Oh my goodness. That's flipping all sorts of scripts, right?
Yeah.
You know? So yeah. What do you think? Closing thoughts, final thoughts?
You know, we keep talking about, like, you know, we shouldn't be so quick to throw, you know, other people under the bus, or like, well, you know, like read a story with other people in mind, but really should read ourselves into the story.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. It just, as we were talking through this, I've read through this a couple times now, but reading it again, it's like, man, it's like you kind of, I disassociate myself from the manager.
Right.
But it's like, yeah, I mean, how have I been unfaithful?
Yeah.
In right. finances, things like that. It's just like, oof.
Right.
It's like, there it is again. Just like, man.
But I will say this though, you've taken so many middle school kids to lunch and bought so much stuff, dude. If you're That's ever true. Homeless, they're gonna put you up.
That's
all right?
True. That is true. Yeah.
Starting with John.
Yeah. Right? Yes. Very much so. It's funny. What's it called? You know, there's this, me and Kayla are actually just taught, I started this new book called Atomic Habits with somebody. Mm-hmm. And the first chapter he had talked about, a lot of times your systems is basically the outputs of your life.
Yep.
And he was talking about lagging indicators, and he was talking about finances on one of them. Mm. And he said, you know, it's like a lagging indicator is basically the system you've provided to make that outcome happen. Yeah. And me and Michaela were talking, and it's like, we've finally developed this system of like tithing and being looser with our money for the kingdom. But it was a hard transition to get there.
Yeah.
Like there was, I remember one year, you know, our giving conclusion or whatever it's called, summary, came back and I was like, wow, that is well below where I need to be as a man that's faithful to serving the Lord, like as well below. Mm-hmm. And so like, it was just a check moment of like my, it's like, it was, but it's already happened. That was my lagging indicator. And so, you know, thinking about this stuff is like, you know, I want to try to get on the leading indicator side where I can change my, like you're saying, change the areas that I'm not managing my stuff well.
That's really good. Yeah. Well, and I tell you what, man, I mean, it, you know, we're kind of, I didn't necessarily intend for us to, you know, talk about finances, but kind of like what's been a revelation to all of us here is like, well, you know, Jesus had a lot to say about it. And, you know, hey, as someone who, you know, I'll just speak to you, you young bucks here, you know, someone who, you know, I'm in my 40s now and looking back at just, you know, there's certain things that I handled and have done well. And there's other ways where it's like, man, I wish I would have done a lot better.
Right.
You know, and finances is one of those areas where it's just like, it can creep up on you. I tell people, listen, I'm in the messy middle right now where, you know, I got kids that break bones and all of a sudden it's like, you know, medical bills and all that kind of stuff. But really just having, like you said, John, that's so well, like, you know, there are systems, whether you think you have them or not, you do, right? You've got systems, even just because they're not black and white or written down, you have a way that you operate.
Right.
And I think it's just healthy for all of us to continually evaluate those things. And it's not about, we shouldn't be legalistic about it. We shouldn't be like, so like, oh, God's going to get me or whatever.
Right.
Really, it should just be a joyful reflection of, okay, in my walk with God, because God has done so much for me, I want to give my best to him.
That's good.
So God, give me wisdom. God, give me guidance, you know? And I think that when we turn our hearts toward that, we don't have to walk in this life, you know, with condemnation all the time when we've messed up. No, we admit it. We get back. Lord, I've squandered some stuff. I can tell you, listen, I've done mistakes with zeros behind them, okay? Right. You know, and there are things I wish I could get back. But you know what? God's mercies are new every morning, and he is a good God. And, you know, he's there to meet us when we do turn. You know, and we find him in that. But yeah, this parable is a good just way to challenge us and make us think about not just finances, but just how are we stewarding everything?
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right?
How are we stewarding everything? And are we looking, are we thinking about eternal things, but are we also thinking about practical things here and now? Because I think they both work together.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. All right. We'll call that a wrap. All right. Okay. Hey, thank you so much. Hope you're getting something out of this. Like, subscribe, share, and we'll see you next time.